Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 4th, 2017. A top U.S. diplomat in South Sudan blames rebel leaders and officials in the Kiir administration for the country's economic and political crisis.
The leaders need to make a commitment, a serious commitment to ending the violence. They need to stop fighting so that people can go home, people like the friends who left today who've been forced to seek refuge in IDP camps, and they can resume their livelihoods.
And South Sudan Army are accused of killing 16 civilians in Pajok town.
One of the community leaders on the ground who called me that there is fighting in the rebel camp, he informed me that it may expand up to the center. I tried to call the commander on the ground. The telephone was not going through.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Unknown number of youth were killed by the South Sudan Army on Monday in Pajok town near the Ugandan border, according to eyewitnesses. Hundreds of Pajok residents have since fled to Uganda following the attack. Imatong State Governor Tobielo Alberio Oromo says he does not have enough information to report casualty figures, but confirms that South Sudan Army troops were in the area conducting military operation in Pajok.
I received a call from one of the community leaders on the ground who called me that there is fighting in the rebel camp. He informed me that it may expand up to the center. I called the number of the commissioner, was not going through. I tried to call the commander on the ground. The telephone was not going through. This morning, somebody called me from Magui and informed me that they will not be able to give me a clear report.
Eyewitnesses say soldiers wearing uniforms of the South Sudan Army arrested more than 10 youth and executed them in Pajok, including a woman and a child. The witnesses say school children and their teachers at Pajok Primary School were reportedly locked in a room and the owner of the school was shot and killed. Governor Tobielo says he's planning to visit the area to assess damages and determine what happened in Pajok town.
Since morning, I've been on standby to get connected. The commander on the ground and the commissioner and the chief should go to the ground. I must move to Pajok and I need to be there for maybe 3 or 4 days. Make sure that if the people are displaced, they must come back to their houses. And my presence there will call all the humanitarian agencies to go and assess the situation.
Rebels with the SPLM-IO say they clashed with the South Sudan Army on Monday and inflicted heavy casualties on government troops. Deputy SPLM-IO spokesman Lam Paul Gabriel told South Sudan in Focus from Kampala that 16 civilians were shot to death by South Sudan Army troops.
So in total, yes, they killed about 16 civilians.
Paul says a community leader who went to rescue students trapped in a school was shot and killed by the South Sudan Army.
But then there was a community leader who rushed to that school to go and help the situation. They ended up getting the community leader, and he was slaughtered, killed in front of all these pupils.
Paul says the soldiers also went on rampage in Pajok town, looting shops and stealing medicine from a local health center.
They also went to a health unit where they found a health worker. They also got him, and also he was slaughtered. They grabbed everything from the school. They destroyed the hospital completely, especially in the market center, destroyed all the shops, and looted everything from the shop.
The deputy spokesman for the South Sudan Army, Brigadier Santo Dominic, says his troops killed the people whom he describes as bandits.
So the SPLA was left with no option other than to rush to Pajok. So on Sunday, 23rd, we decided to rush to Pajok. 22nd, the second, we rushed to Pajok, and we flushed out the bandit. You know, during the process of flushing out, 16 of the bandits remained on the ground, you know, as dead bodies. And then the Pajok is controlled by the SPLA, and everything has returned into its normality. And the call from the civil population that their failure should not leave, or should their failure leave back to Magwi, then it has to leave some detach in Farajok in order to ensure the security of the civil population so that they are not vulnerable to attacks from the bandits. This is what had happened.
That's the deputy spokesman for the South Sudan Army, Brigadier Santo Dominic, giving us updates on the situation in Farajok. U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Molly Fee says top government officials and rebel leaders are both responsible for the country's crisis. While peace monitors in the country and other groups have tried to pressure on the warring parties to settle their differences, Fee says the country will not move forward unless and until President Kiir and former first vice president Riek Machar agree to a ceasefire and commit to building the country.
Well, the solution needs to come from the leaders, Ayan. The leaders need to make a commitment, a serious commitment to ending the violence. They need to stop fighting so that people can go home, people like the friends who left today who've been forced to seek refuge in IDP camps, and they can resume their livelihood. So that's everybody's goal, and we've been having a hard time trying to reach it. Last weekend, President Salva Kiir Mayardit traveled to Nairobi, where he met with heads of state from the neighboring region known as IGAD, and he committed there to announce a unilateral ceasefire. Unfortunately, we haven't seen any information that indicates that he's moved forward on that commitment. Yesterday in South Africa, the former president of Botswana, President Festus Mohai, who is working on behalf of IGAD to try and monitor implementation of the peace agreement, met with the leader of the armed opposition, Dr. Riek Machar Tenney, and asked him to declare a unilateral ceasefire, and he too denied that request. So as long as we have this situation where the leaders are refusing to cease armed conflict and to move to a political channel to resolve their power dispute, we're going to have fighting, and we're going to have food insecurity.
And speaking of JMEC, what is your assessment of them? Some South Sudanese activists, some IDPs that we've spoken to, and some of our listeners are telling us that the chairman, Mr. Festus Mohai, should resign.
Festus Mohai, like many partners and friends of South Sudan, the country of South Sudan, and the people of South Sudan, is working to try and achieve better results. But ultimately, it's the decisions of the leaders here that will make the important difference.
The media here in the U.S. is depicting a very grim picture. Is the picture that the media is depicting, is that accurate?
Well, absolutely. The statistics are very grim. Today, there are about 1.9 million persons who are displaced in South Sudan. There are about 1.6 persons who are now refugees in neighboring countries, including about 800,000 in Uganda and about 300,000 in Sudan and about 350,000 in Ethiopia. More than 5 million folks are suffering from food insecurity, and as you have heard, that there are two counties in the former legacy state of Unity which are suffering from famine. So those and inflation is about 400%, and all of this is having a devastating impact on the economy. So when you look at those numbers, it's hard to feel positive. But I can tell you, because I live here, that there are many people who are distraught by the situation and trying to seek a change.
That's Molly Fee, U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan. She was speaking to Ayen Bior from Juba over the weekend. The rebels of the SPLM-IO say they are disappointed that demands are being placed on their group after a meeting between the chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Festus Mohai, and rebel leader Riek Machar. It is the first time Machar met with JMAC chairman Festus Mohai since July last year. SPLM-IO Secretary for External Affairs Stephen Parr claims the former president of Botswana told Machar to renounce violence, join the national dialogue, and declare unilateral ceasefire. Parr says the SPLM-IO wants JMAC to resuscitate the August 2015 peace deal to restore peace in the country. He says JMAC lost its credibility as a neutral body.
Well, the two leaders discussed the peace process in the country, and President Mogae was demanding things that are not really logical.
What are these things that he was demanding?
He was demanding the leadership of the SPLM IO joining this Kyr's engineered national dialogue. The other thing is the unfair demand of a unilateral ceasefire, when he knows very well that we were chased out of Juba by the current regime, which actually violated the ceasefire from day one. The party that is now on the offensive should actually initiate that process because we are on the defensive.
So you're telling me that JMAC is asking SPLM IO to join the national dialogue and to declare ceasefire. What other things did he ask your group to do?
These are the major things that they discuss with our chairman, that we should denounce violence. That is their wording, which is actually unfair wording because we have not initiated this violence. This violence was introduced in 2013 by Salva Kiir, reintroduced again by Salva Kiir in July 2016. And what we are telling them is actually to evaluate the peace process correctly. The JMAC has lost its credibility. It has done a terrible job actually doing the monitoring and evaluation for the provision of the agreement.
You sound like you are a victim here. You keep saying unfair, unfair. Why would you use the word unfair?
Because nothing is fair in this process. First of all, the international community pushed us to Juba to implement the agreement in 2016. And in no time, Salva Kiir was in public record telling the whole world that he would not really implement the agreement. And he said, and he's in public record, that these agreements can be violated because it is not Bible and it is not Quran al-Karim. True to his word, he initiated lynching of our cadres in the full view of the international community. He got away with it, including the rapes of the Americans.
But the fighting in Juba was between your forces and government forces. So how would you blame one party when it takes two to fight?
Well, we did not go to Juba to fight. Salva Kiir knew that, and the whole world knew that. We could not have gone to Juba with 1,370 to start a fight.
Stephen, there is famine in South Sudan. And the UN and others are saying this is a man-made. And they are saying the leaders of South Sudan, including your chairman, should do something to end this violence so that food is delivered to people who are hungry.
Actually, the correct wording has been very clear from the United Nations that this war has caused famine. And this war is Kiir war.
So they say it's man-made. They say the famine is man-made.
It is Kiir-made.
I did not see that.
I'm saying this. You are not saying it. I'm just telling you this. And the records are there. The international community is also
to be blamed. Why would you blame the government when you, your group, prevent aid workers from doing their work, personnel from a non-governmental organization were under your custody for some days?
Listen, this thing is not fair. And the statistic is also very clear on this. Who is actually obstructing the aid provision in the country? Salva Kiir's government is even killing them. We have not killed even a single aid worker. The one that you said we have helped are not aid workers. It may be that they are caught in a, you know, in a war situation, but our records are very clean, and the international humanitarian community has that.
Last week, I spoke to one of your commanders, Dak Dup Bichok, who said that, yes, the SPLM-IO released the three oil workers. They are warning foreigners not to go to oil facilities. This oil is the mainstay of the country's economy. Why would you scare oil workers from doing their job?
The current so-called government in Juba is illegitimate government. It cannot be allowed to use the resources of the Republic of South Sudan to execute a war of genocide. We will not allow that to happen. But the good thing is, and this is what the international public need to understand, is that our records are very clean. We have released even government officials that we have captured, and we have taken very good care of any international personnel that was flown into our areas by the government. And that is what is in our record.
Presidential spokesman Atenyue Katenyu was saying there are local staff who are still in your custody. They are working for the oil companies and they are South Sudanese and you did not release them.
I don't have that information. What we have in our record up to now is that all the oil explorers that we found there have been in safe custody and they have been released to their countries.
That's Stephen Parr, SPLM IEO Secretary for External Affairs. He was speaking to me on Monday in our studio here in Washington. South Sudan in Focus requested comments from JMAC. We were told our request was sent to JMAC's Strategic Communication Advisor. A South Sudanese media rights body is calling on President Salva Kiir to release all journalists detained in South Sudan so that they can take part in the national dialogue. A petition submitted yesterday to the Kiir administration also called on the government to reopen all media houses shut down by the National Security Service. At least two reporters are being detained for allegedly contacting rebels led by SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar. Three newspapers were shut down after the conflict began in late 2013. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
President Salva Kiir recently pledged to free all political detainees in South Sudan. The Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMD, says the president should also pardon detained journalists so they can report on the national dialogue as well as other developments in South Sudan. Kong Pal, AMD Secretary General, says the detained journalists should have the right to report on stories and express themselves freely without fear or reprisal from the government.
Our request to the president to release those journalists came after National Prayer Day announcement by the president that he is willing to pardon those political detainees. And we don't know which category these journalists fall under, but we feel that since we need them for national dialogue, we feel that these journalists will play a greater role in nation building.
Amidi says freelance reporter George Livio, who worked for United Nations on the Miraya FM radio in Juba, and freelance reporter John Model are still being held by South Sudan National Security Service officials without charges. George was detained since August 2014 and Model was detained in January this year. At least 10 journalists have been killed in South Sudan since South Sudan declared its independence from Sudan in 2011. Nine of them were killed after fighting broke out in Juba in December 2013. Pal says the AMDI's petition letter also calls on President Kiir to reopen media houses shut down by security service personnel across the country. He says the Nation Mirror, the Arabic language Al Tabir, and the Citizen newspaper, which was closed in 2015, were all shut down by the National Security Service and remain closed today.
These are some of the major newspapers that has been in the market for quite a long time. So if they come back to the market, they will be able to disseminate information on national dialogue, and this is also that will be the role of media.
Presidential spokesman Atenyi Wek Atenyi says he has given the letter to President Kiir and the president will make a decision on the journalist.
I have submitted it to the president. It is given to the president, so nobody can respond on behalf of the president until the president has given directives to effect.
Several South Sudanese journalists have fled the country after receiving threats from suspected National Security Service operatives. Kong says AMDIS will not ask journalists who fled the country to return because they are clearly afraid to work in South Sudan. He is calling on South Sudanese leaders to restore peace so journalists and others can return home and resume their work without fear of retribution.
Until they are sure, and until we are sure that peace has returned to the country, yes, we will be able to ask them to return. But it's up to them to return when they see peace has returned and when they see they are safe to return.
Kong says he received assurance from Atenyi that the media would be considered as one of the key stakeholders of the national dialogue.
And he suggested that we can actually come up with the name of the committee, name of some members from AMDIS or other media house, so that they are also he can also present the names to the president in case he considered that media need to be also part of national dialogue.
Last week, the British-based rights group Amnesty International urged the President Kiir to release all people detained without charge by security agencies, including 28 men held at South Sudan's National Security Service headquarters in Juba. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at a healthy weight. That story is after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you fear speaking in public?
Yes, I'm not so good with speaking in public. Yes, so I'm a little afraid of it. But once I start, I always get over the fear.
I don't think so. I enjoy speaking in public.
Not necessarily. I'm a good speaker, so I don't fear.
I fear I'm shy, so that is why I fear.
Anytime I'm given the microphone to speak in public, I shake. So I don't like speaking in public.
I don't fear because I practice every Sunday. I happen to be a preacher anyway. So by the mere fact that I'm able to speak every Sunday at least in church, it's easier for me to speak in public.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about a healthy weight. In developing countries, losing weight and maintaining it is good for your health. But what about people who stay overweight? VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
There's a paradox that's been seen in many studies of weight, that being a little overweight is not necessarily a bad thing. The research has concluded that it may actually prolong life in some ways, or at least not shorten it. But that's not the conclusion of a 16-year study of 225,000 people that assessed their weight in three prospective studies in terms of body mass index. The participants' health outcomes were then followed for a dozen years. The study, published in the journal Annals of Internal Medicine, found an increased risk of death among obese or overweight people compared to people who maintain their normal weight. The finding contradicts earlier research, including a large study by the National Center for Health Statistics at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That 2013 study found that being a little overweight was optimal for reducing one's risk of dying. The key to good health, according to the authors of the new study, is losing weight if one is carrying around extra kilos and maintaining the lower weight over a period of time. But there's a cautionary note. The reasons for weight loss in some cases may not be appreciated by healthcare providers. Andrew Stokes is a professor in the Department of Global Health at Boston University's School of Public Health and Development and senior author of the study.
People on the pathway to dying often develop illnesses that make them lose weight. So some people in the normal weight range are there not because of they're in good health, but because they've developed a disease such as heart disease or cancer.
Stokes says most of the studies that have been done on weight and its relationship to health take a single weight measurement or snapshot, as well as blood work that looks for things such as elevated cholesterol levels. Participants are then followed up periodically to see how they are doing, and many in the snapshot scenario are just fine. He worries that these studies, which show that being overweight may actually be good for your health, offer a dangerous message that trickles down to the public at large.
It's a message that could potentially create apathy towards weight loss and maintaining a healthy weight. So one implication of this study is that even a bit of excess weight can be harmful, and that it's really important to prevent weight gain and to maintain a stable, healthy weight across the life course.
Stokes notes that more than one quarter of the world's population is overweight, a problem that's emerging in low- and middle-income countries due to the availability of sugary drinks and processed food. These foods can lead to chronic health problems like diabetes. So says Stokes, people should not be confused that becoming overweight due to these indulgences is a prescription for good health in the long run. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move back to South Sudan. Traders in Imatong State's Magui County are closing their shops. The traders say they are not able to buy goods due to insecurity on the road and that they are not making any money in Magui. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Torit.
Shop owners in Magui County say the high exchange rate of the U.S. dollar and Uganda shillings is making it nearly impossible to import goods. This week they had to buy 100 U.S. dollars at 14,000 South Sudanese pounds and to buy 2,500 Ugandan shillings to pay for Ugandan goods. A trader must pay up to 100 South Sudanese pounds for their currency exchange rate. Unlike David, Olympio sells various goods in his shop in Magui Town. Olympio says many of his customers blame traders for increasing commodity prices that rises each day. Olympio says he plans to close down his shop in a few weeks if the economic crisis continues.
The exchange rate nowadays is keep on increasing. Sometimes you'll get a dollar with 12,000, sometimes 14,000, 15,000. In that way, it has actually hindered our progress in business. The price keep on increasing. You'll see when you go to Juba, very early morning, you'll get a different price. Reaching to evening is a different price. And the next day is also a different price.
Olympio also complains that men in military uniform have set up several roadblocks along the roads, demanding unofficial taxes from traders bringing in goods. He says the men do not issue receipts for the so-called taxes they levy on traders.
We have so many checkpoints on the way. Coming from Juba up to Magui, maybe you'll get even more than 10 checkpoints. And these checkpoints need you to pay all the money. So any checkpoint, maybe 500, you go to that one, 200 something, you go to another one, 1,000. All this will also contributed to the problem facing us here.
A trader in Magui Town who prefers to be identified only as Anthony for security reasons says he is closing his shop because he no longer earns any profit.
Most of our things we bring from Uganda or Kenya, but now it is hard to move with money. Even if you see my shop here now, it doesn't have a lot of quantities unless we have dollars, and to get dollars here is very hard now.
Ayela Joseph is a retail trader in Magui Town. He sells soap, salt, sweets, biscuits and other small items. Joseph began his business in 2007. Back then, he says his shop was always fully stocked. Today, he sells only a few items.
Prices of goods is now high. That is why our businesses now decline. A lot of problems, which are many, now is making our businesses to fall.
For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Mama Soura by the Freedom Boys.
Bitu Brothers, Maski and Freedom Boys. Nam, Bina WJ, Timoga, let them know. I am.
Mama Soura, Pata Lejua.
We have been listening to the Freedom Boys with the song Mama Soura. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mm-hmm.
Mama Zora, mapi muscula, rabuna biwadi, leana tani. Kamasu wana zede mama, bukorai.